The Sharangama Sutra, the section on the four clear and unalterable instructions on purity. Sutra. Ananda straightened his robes and then bowed in the midst of the assembly and placed his palms together. The tracks of his mind were perfectly clear, and he felt a mixture of joy and sorrow. His intent was to benefit beings in the future, as he made obeisance and said to the Buddha, "Greatly compassionate world-honored one, I have already awakened and received this teaching for becoming a Buddha, and I can cultivate it without the slightest doubt. I have often heard the Thus Come One say, 'Save others first, then save yourself.' That is the aspiration of a bodhisattva. Once your own enlightenment is perfected, then you can enlighten others. This is the way the Thus Come One responds to the world. Although I am not yet saved, I vow to save all living beings in the Dharma-ending age." Commentary. After Ananda had listened to Manjushri Bodhisattva's verse, he stood up and straightened his robes. He fixed his collar and arranged his robes. He was never sloppy or careless, never let his clothes get messed up, and then he bowed in the midst of the assembly and placed his palms together. The tracks of his mind were perfectly clear. Ananda was not as confused as he was previously, and he felt a mixture of joy and sorrow. His intent was to benefit beings in the future, as he made obeisance and said to the Buddha. Ananda didn't know whether to laugh or cry. Do you remember how easily Ananda cries? He has already cried several times since the start of the sutra, and now he wants to cry again, but he also feels like laughing. What was his sorrow? As it is said, joy in extreme gives rise to sorrow. He was totally happy, thinking, "Now I have the Buddha Dharma. I understand the genuine Dharma." He had never felt such joy, but it wasn't enough to understand for himself. He wanted to benefit beings of the future. So he made obeisance to the Buddha and said, "Greatly compassionate, world-honored one, I have already awakened and received this teaching for becoming a Buddha, and I can cultivate it without the slightest doubt. I will cultivate by means of the Dharma and will never have any more doubts. I have often heard the Thus Come One say." Ananda always has to substantiate what he says by making reference to the Buddha's own teaching. He says here, "I've heard the Buddha say, 'Save others first, then save yourself.' That is the aspiration of a bodhisattva. Before one has attained the way, one can go ahead and teach others. That's the way a bodhisattva does it. Once your own enlightenment is perfected, then you can enlighten others. That is the way the Thus Come One responds to the world. You help others wake up by means of the principles that you have awakened to. That is what the Buddha does. Although I am not yet saved, I vow to save all living beings in the Dharma-ending age. I haven't attained the way yet, but I want to enable all beings in the final age to be taken across. I want them to attain the benefits of the Buddha Dharma." Sutra. World-honored one, those living beings will gradually drift away from the Buddha and there will be as many deviant teachers propounding their methods as there are sands in the Ganges. I want to enable those beings to collect their thoughts and enter samadhi. How can I cause them to reside peacefully in the Bodhi Manda, far from the exploits of demons, and be irreversible in their resolve for Bodhi? Commentary. World-honored one, those living beings will gradually drift away from the Buddha. Beings in the Dharma-ending age will gradually end up being very far away from the Buddha, and even the Buddha Dharma. There will be as many deviant teachers propounding their methods as there are sands in the Ganges. That's the way it is now. Deviant teachers claim to understand things that they actually do not understand. Not enlightened, they say that they are. Not certified as sages, they say that they are. I ask them, have you been certified to the first stage, the second stage, the third, the fourth? Which one? You're enlightened? What are you enlightened to? It leaves them speechless. I pursue it. You are a Buddha and yet you can't even say what stage of fruition you have been certified to? How can you have jumped to Buddhahood? And yet they persist, claiming that not only are they themselves Buddhas, everybody is a Buddha. That is their theme. This is a great lie. When you haven't reached that state, you can't go shooting off your mouth. There's no one worse than a deviant teacher. Be careful not to become one, whether you understand the Buddha Dharma or not. Don't be like one of them who was asked a point about the teachings and replied, I'm getting old. I've forgotten. What did he mean he had forgotten? He never knew it to begin with. That kind of talk is designed to cheat people. If you know, say that you know. If you don't know, you should say you don't know. You can't say you've forgotten when you basically don't even understand what's being asked. When deviant teachers propound their methods, they are intent upon taking advantage of situations, and the doctrines they explain are wrong. For instance, sexual desire is wrong, but they say it is fine. It's the most wonderful activity. They praise it, causing people to become confused and to be unable to distinguish true principle. What is wrong, they say is right. What is right, they say is wrong. They have deviant knowledge and deviant views. Their outlook is improper. During the Dharma-ending age, Ananda says, such teachers will abound. I want to enable those beings to collect their thoughts and enter samadhi. Even though there will be as many deviant teachers in that age as there are sand grains in the Ganges, I still hope living beings will be able to give rise to proper knowledge and proper views. How can I cause them to reside peacefully in a Bodhi Manda, far from the exploits of demons, and be irreversible in their resolve for Bodhi? For example, there are some deviant demons and external religions that do nothing but cheat people with their teachings. They talk a lot about the affairs of men and women and say that the heavier one's sexual desire, the faster one can become a Buddha. This is totally wrong, entirely deviant. You should be attentive to this point. Don't be cheated by such people. In the Orthodox Dharma, any mention of sexual desire as favorable is wrong. Such methods of teaching are the exploits of demons. Ananda wants to know how to help people of the final age not to retreat from Bodhi. Some people study the Buddha Dharma for a while and then go back on their resolve. I don't want to study the Buddha Dharma. It's too difficult. I have to get rid of all of my faults, but what if I can't? It's better if I just don't study. They lose their vigor. They admit defeat. They are overcome by demonic ghosts. Ananda wants to know how to keep this from happening. Sutra. At that time, the world-honored one praised Ananda in front of the whole assembly, saying, "Good indeed. How good it is that you have asked how to establish a Bodhimanda and to rescue and protect living beings who are sunk in the morass of the final age. Listen well now, and I will tell you." Ananda and the great assembly agree to uphold the teaching. Commentary. Ananda said he wanted beings of the final age not to retreat from the resolve for Bodhi. He wanted them to have decisive faith, to vow to protect and uphold the Buddha Dharma, to study and practice the Buddha Dharma, and never to go back on their resolve. But how could he get them to be that way? When Shakyamuni Buddha heard Ananda ask that question, he was delighted. The Buddha is in a state of unmoving suchness, but when someone wants to protect the Buddha Dharma and help people become Buddhas, it nonetheless makes him happy. At that time, the world-honored one praised Ananda in front of the whole assembly, saying, "Good indeed." The Buddha was pleased. "You're really fine, Ananda. How good it is." He praised him twice. "That you have asked how to establish a Bodhimanda and to rescue and protect living beings who are sunk in the morass of the final age. You want to help beings in the Dharma-ending age who are being drowned in the water and consumed by the fire. Listen well now, and I will tell you." Ananda and the great assembly agreed to uphold the teaching. When they heard the Buddha agree to speak the Dharma, their joy was even greater. The Buddha probably said, "Do you want to listen to this?" Everyone undoubtedly answer, "We want to, we want to." When deviant teachers explain their methods, their sole topic is sexual desire. The things they say are unprincipled. This should be distinguished clearly. Sometimes bodhisattvas also use compassion, kind words, and a protective heart to teach living beings because they know that all living beings are steeped in desire. Every living being has thoughts of sexual desire, so he does not expect them to cut off their love and desire immediately, but he uses all kinds of expedient means to get them to see through and renounce sexual desire. Then they can put a stop to it themselves. This is the state of a bodhisattva, totally different from that of the deviant teachers of external ways. Once, Guanyin Bodhisattva transformed into a fishmonger. She was an exquisite woman who went about the village with her fish basket. No one in the village believed in the Buddha, but when the young men of the village caught sight of this maiden, they desired her. The village wasn't large, but there were at least 100 young men there, and every one of them wanted to marry her. Guanyin, with her fish basket, said, "There are so many of you, I can't marry 100 men, but I've thought of a method to choose a husband. I will marry whichever one of the 100 of you is the first to be able to learn to recite by heart the Universal Door chapter of the Lotus Sutra. Go back home and I'll give you 3 days. By the end of the 3 days, there were 40 or 50 who could recite it from memory. The woman with the fish basket said, "But there are still too many of you. Even though you have met the requirements, I can't have 50 husbands. This time, go back and within 5 days memorize the Vajra Sutra. I'll marry whoever does that." So the 50 who had made it to the first level went back and began to practice the Vajra Sutra. At the end of the 5 days, there were some 20 who could recite it by heart. The fishmonger said, "There are still too many of you. It's impossible for me to marry you all. I have one more task. Anyone who can memorize the Lotus Sutra in 7 days will be my husband. I believe whoever can do that will be worthy." The 20 began to recite the Lotus Sutra, and at the end of 7 days, there was one man who could recite it from memory. His name was Ma, and he came from a wealthy family. So there was a large wedding, and everyone was invited. That evening, after the festivities, they retired, but who would have guessed that the bride would have a heart attack and die suddenly? And the bridegroom had gone to so much effort. He had memorized the Universal Door Chapter, the Vajra Sutra, and the Lotus Sutra, and he still had no bride. Shortly thereafter, the funeral took place, and a monk in purple robes appeared on the scene. "What's going on here?" he asked. "Our new daughter-in-law passed away suddenly, and we are burying her." "No," said the monk, "there's nothing in that coffin at all. Who are you mourning for? Open it and take a look." Indeed, the coffin was empty. They were all amazed. "Where has she gone? After her, bring her back." The monk told them, "That was Guanyin Bodhisattva. You people in this village didn't believe in the Buddha, so she manifested the appearance of a beautiful woman in order to get you young men who are so fond of forms to study the Buddha Dharma." Then she left. When the bridegroom Ma heard that, he renounced all worldly things and left the home life. After that, he was certified to the fruition of a sage. That really happened in China. Sutra. The Buddha told Ananda, "You constantly hear me explain in the Vinaya that there are three unalterable aspects to cultivation. That is, collecting one's thoughts constitutes the precepts. From the precepts comes samadhi, and out of samadhi arises wisdom. Samadhi arises from precepts, and wisdom is revealed out of samadhi. These are called the three non-outflow studies." Commentary. When everyone in the assembly had agreed to uphold the teaching, the Buddha told Ananda, "You constantly hear me explain in the Vinaya that there are three unalterable aspects to cultivation." The Vinaya includes the rules for both the greater and lesser vehicles. It discusses the precepts. These three fixed aspects are unalterable. That is, collecting one's thoughts constitutes the precepts. These three are precepts, samadhi, and wisdom. You collect and maintain your thoughts, just as a magnet collects iron filings. This refers especially to our thoughts that climb on conditions, that take advantage of situations. When these thoughts take control, one is always paying attention to other people. One is continually thinking up ways to draw near to wealthy people or people in positions of authority. Such thoughts go on and on all day long. That's called climbing on conditions. It means that one has not collected one's thoughts. Collect those thoughts. Don't let them take advantage of situations. Don't let them run out at random. But our mind is such that it runs away with us, even if we don't want it to. We may forbid it to have false thinking, but in the next moment, another false thought comes up. One ceases, and the next one begins. The first thought dissolves, but the next one is already on its way. And before that one is completely gone, the next one has arisen. The mind that climbs on conditions never ceases. What you must do is to collect and maintain your thoughts. Bring your mind back to one point. The whole reason we can't become Buddhas, can't become enlightened, can't awaken to the way is that we do not have control of our mind. If you get your thoughts together, there is nothing you cannot do. You'll be successful at everything. The precepts then are designed to collect your thoughts. Precepts put a stop to evil and prevent further transgressions. Samadhi arises from precepts. Holding the precepts is like holding a bottle of muddy water still until the silt settles and the water becomes clear. Samadhi means not moving. And wisdom is revealed out of samadhi. As Manjushri Bodhisattva's verse said, when stillness is ultimate, the light penetrates. You become enlightened. Within samadhi, your own genuine wisdom arises. These are called the three non-outflow studies. Guard the precepts, and from the precepts will come samadhi. Out of samadhi will arise wisdom. Sutra. Ananda, why do I call collecting one's thoughts the precepts? If living beings in the six paths of any mundane world had no thoughts of lust, they would not have to follow a continual succession of births and deaths. Commentary. Ananda, why do I call collecting one's thoughts the precepts? Now I will tell you, if living beings in the six paths of any mundane world had no thoughts of lust, the six paths include gods, humans, asuras, animals, hungry ghosts, and beings in the hells. If they were free of thoughts of sexual desire, they would not have to follow a continual succession of births and deaths. They could cut off birth and death. Sutra. Your basic purpose in cultivating is to transcend the wearisome defilements, but if you don't renounce your lustful thoughts, you will not be able to get out of the dust. Commentary. The Buddha is speaking to Ananda here when he says, your basic purpose in cultivating is to transcend the wearisome defilements. You want to get out of birth and death. But if you don't renounce your lustful thoughts, you will not be able to get out of the dust. If you do not cut off sexual desire, it will be impossible to get out of the mundane defilements of the world. That's because thoughts of sexual desire are themselves defiling. They themselves are the wearisome dust. Not to speak of engaging in lustful practices, even the presence of such thoughts is unclean. If you don't renounce sexual desire, it's entirely unreasonable to hope to become enlightened and accomplish Buddhahood. To hold on to sexual desire on the one hand and expect to become enlightened on the other hand is the stupidest kind of thinking. People who think that way are impossible to teach. Even if Shakyamuni Buddha himself appeared in the world right now, he would have no way to bring such people to attainment of fruition. Such people are the most dull-witted of all. Sutra. Even though one may have some wisdom and the manifestation of Chan Samadhi, one is certain to enter demonic paths if one does not cut off lust. At best, one will be a demon king. On the average, one will be in the retinue of demons. At the lowest level, one will be a female demon. Commentary. Even though one may have some wisdom and the manifestation of Chan Samadhi, one is certain to enter demonic paths if one does not cut off lust. You may be wise, and when you sit down to meditate, you may experience light ease and feel extremely comfortable. That is, you can enter Chan Samadhi. You think you're wise then? If you don't put a stop to lust, you'll end up a demon. At best, one will be a demon king in the sixth desire heaven. On the average, one will be in the retinue of demons. One will become an ordinary demon. At the lowest level, one will be a female demon. They are beautiful, but extremely coarse. People with wisdom should be careful. Smart people should take careful note of this passage. Don't let your intelligence go back on you so that you make a mistake in the end. Don't have the attitude, "You don't understand, but I do. You're not clear, but I am." That's petty intelligence, petty wisdom. Don't let a promising future go to ruin. Sutra. These demons have their groups of disciples. Each says of himself that he has accomplished the unsurpassed way. Commentary. These people with a little wisdom who do not cut off their lust are always talking about love and desire. I love you. You love me. And they love back and forth until they become demonic. Then what happens? These demons have their groups of disciples. Each says of himself that he has accomplished the unsurpassed way. They too will have disciples and protectors. Totally without shame, they will loudly pronounce that they have achieved the highest path. I'm a Buddha. We are all supreme and unsurpassed. Basically, such people are demons, but they don't admit it. They profess instead to be Buddhas. You see, there are even phony Buddhas, but they don't see themselves as phony. They think they are real. They believe in heaven above, on earth below, I alone am honored. Sutra. After my extinction in the Dharma-ending age, these hordes of demons will abound, spreading like wildfire as they openly practice greed and lust. Claiming to be good-knowing advisors, they will cause living beings to fall into the pit of love and views and lose the way to Bodhi. Commentary. Shakyamuni Buddha says, "While I'm in the world, such demons will not dare to show themselves. But, after my extinction in the Dharma-ending age, these hordes of demons will abound." It is just our present age that is being referred to here, when the Dharma is about to die out. There are simply too many of these demons around, going about everywhere discussing sexual desire, and they themselves revel in lust, be they men or women. At the same time, they think that they are enlightened and have become Buddhas. How is it that I recognize such people as these, such as the one who says he's a Buddha? We won't mention any names. He said he was a Buddha, and I said he was a demon. "Who's a demon?" he said. "You are," I replied. How did I know? He's just like what's described here. He's always talking about emotion and love. Love, love, I love everybody. It's really shameless. What right do you have to be in love with everyone? These demons abound, spreading like wildfire as they openly practice greed and lust. They'll be all the rage in the world, Ignorant people will be taken in by them, thinking what they have to say makes sense. It will especially agree with young people's way of thinking. As the saying goes, persons of similar tastes get together. They praise one another as they go down this road. If they didn't agree with each other's ideas, they wouldn't do that. If people's paths are not in agreement, they won't collaborate with one another. But if their thinking is the same, then the blind can lead the blind. How pitiful! I'm not scolding people here, but if one who is dazed transmits the delusion to another, when all is said and done, neither one understands. The teacher falls into the hells, and the disciples burrow in after him. The teacher winds up in the hells, and when his disciples show up there as well, he is surprised. How did you get here? This is a terrible place. You came first, and you're our teacher, so of course we would follow you, they reply. Claiming to be good knowing advisors, they boast, I give lectures all over the place to lots of people. Ridiculous! They will cause living beings to fall into the pit of love and views and lose the way to Bodhi. They cause all they come in contact with to fall into the pit of sexual desire. They forfeit Bodhi and end up in the hells. Sutra. When you teach people in the world to cultivate samadhi, they must first of all sever the mind of lust. This is the first clear and unalterable instruction on purity given by the Thus Come Ones and the Buddhas of the past, world-honored ones. Commentary. Demon kings advocate love. The difference between that and the teaching of a bodhisattva is ever so slight, like the flip of a hand. In what way is it different? Bodhisattvas also love people, but their love is a compassionate and protective kind, devoid of sexual desire. But there is a current of lust that runs through everything a demon king says. He openly advocates it to the point that he says that the heavier one's sexual desire, the higher the level of enlightenment one can reach. This kind of deviant doctrine harms people. Bodhisattvas have no lust. They do not make distinctions between living beings and themselves. Demons have motives. They are greedy for things. Bodhisattvas have no ulterior motives and are not greedy. In regard to this, the Buddhist teachings explains the 12 links of conditioned causation. When you teach people in the world to cultivate samadhi, they must first of all sever the mind of lust. Teach them to cut off their thoughts of sexual desire. This is the first clear and unalterable instruction on purity given by the Thus Come Ones and the Buddhas of the past, world-honored ones. This is the method of teaching used by the Thus Come Ones. It is the resolution of all the Buddhas of the past. This is clear instruction that teaches people how to be pure. One must cut off lust. This is a fixed principle. It is not the least bit flexible. It's not to say that one can have lust or not have it. One must get rid of it. If you want to be enlightened and also hold on to your thoughts of lust, then you certainly will join the retinues of demons. Sutra. Therefore, Ananda, if cultivators of Chan Samadhi do not cut off lust, they will be like someone who cooks sand in the hope of getting rice. After hundreds of thousands of eons, it will still be just hot sand. Why? It wasn't rice to begin with. It was only sand. Commentary. You see, now he brings up an analogy. He tells Ananda, "You don't believe it, so I'll explain the principle for you." Therefore, Ananda, if cultivators of Chan Samadhi do not cut off lust, they will be like someone who cooks sand in the hope of getting rice. If one does not sever sexual desire and yet cultivates and meditates every day, then one will cultivate on the one hand and have outflows on the other. Everything one gains will be dissipated. Whatever one gains in cultivation will be lost tenfold in outflows. If one cultivates 10 times as much, one will lose 100 times as much in outflows. Unable to renounce sexual desire, one still sits in meditation with the hope of getting enlightened, with the aim of getting a little upside-down bliss. This is just like cooking sand in the hope of getting rice. After hundreds of thousands of eons, it will still be just hot sand. It's useless. Why? It wasn't rice to begin with. It was only sand. You expect to become enlightened without giving up sexual desire? It's the same as expecting to get rice from sand. There's something else to be said here. If you can sever sexual desire, then even if you are together with the opposite sex all day long, there will be no problem. There won't be any sexual desire, any appearance of male or female, any appearance of people, of self, of living beings, or a lifespan. Some people know no shame and say, "That's the way I am." To just say you're that way isn't enough. There's no proof. How do you know you're that way? If you were that way, you basically wouldn't recognize that you were. You couldn't have the idea that you didn't have any sexual desire. If you don't, you simply don't. You wouldn't go around advertising it. That just shows that you really aren't that way. If you really don't have any sexual desire, then the eyes see forms appear, but inside there's nothing. The ears hear defiling sounds, but the mind does not know of them. No matter how pleasing a sound the ear picks up, your mind is unaware of it. Then you've got a little going for you. And then, if you can reach the point that you can walk, sit, and lie down together with someone of the opposite sex without there being any incident, any arisal of thoughts of sexual desire, and really have there be none, that will count. It's not to say that your mind still races, but you grit your teeth and say firmly, "I can take it." That doesn't count. It has to be that not one thought arises. The mind does not move. That there basically is no trace of lust in your heart. That's genuine. If you occasionally are still aware of what women are all about, then you've failed the test. Once there was someone who got enlightened and went to seek certification from his teacher. "What enlightenment have you opened?" his teacher asked. His reply was, "Oh, before I never realized it, but now I know that bhikshunis are women." His teacher checked him out with a Buddha eye and saw that indeed he was enlightened. "You're all right," he said in certification. "Who doesn't know that?" you say. If you weren't enlightened, you wouldn't even say that much. It was because he had awakened that he voiced that observation. This is not something you can cheat people with, especially since his teacher had the Buddha eye open. He looked at him and knew that he had realized the first fruition of arhatship. Sutra. If you seek the Buddha's wonderful fruition and still have physical lust, then even if you attain a wonderful awakening, it will be based in lust. With lust at the source, you will revolve in the three paths and not be able to get out. Which road will you take to cultivate and be certified to the Thus Come One's Nirvana? Commentary. The Buddha said to Ananda, "Your fondness for Matangi's daughter not only involved thoughts of lust, you still had physical lust as well. If you seek the Buddha's wonderful fruition and still have physical lust, then even if you attain a wonderful awakening, it will be based in lust. Although you may attain the subtle principle at the heart of it, you still have not gotten rid of the roots of lust. With lust at the source, you will revolve in the three paths and not be able to get out. In the future, you will certainly fall into the hells. The three paths are those of animals, hungry ghosts, and beings in the hells. And you will just revolve in these three and be unable to leave them. Which road will you take to cultivate and be certified to the Thus Come One's Nirvana? Which of these paths will lead you to that fruition?" Sutra. You must cut off the lust which is intrinsic in both body and mind. Then get rid of even the aspect of cutting it off. At that point, you have some hope of attaining the Buddha's Bodhi. Commentary. You must cut off the lust which is intrinsic in both body and mind. You definitely must get rid of the most subtle and fine, the most infinitesimal single thought of lust. That just means that ignorance itself must go. It must be done both physically and mentally. Then, get rid of even the aspect of cutting it off. You cannot even be aware of having cut it off. At that point, you have some hope of attaining the Buddha's Bodhi. Sutra. What I have said here is the Buddha's teaching. Any explanation counter to it is the teaching of Papillon. Commentary. What I have said here is the Buddha's teaching. This is the way the Buddhas explain the Dharma. Any explanation counter to it is the teaching of Papillon. Methods taught by a demon king. Papillon is a Sanskrit term that means evil one and refers to Mara, the demon king. People who come to listen to the sutras must certainly be able to see. The blind cannot come to hear the sutras, nor can the deaf or dumb. The more the people come to hear, the smarter they get. Everyone should open his eye of genuine wisdom and truly turn the organ of the ear back to the self nature. Do not seek outside.